Blog Talk Radio.
Opening, really, says he. I pause the music twice and then three times because it started off with my finger doing it again. Here we are. That was Ice House, starting off three times with Electric Blue. Well, the first couple of chords, anyway. And Ivor Davies, a great singer at the front, from the album Man of Colours that sold a heck of a lot of albums, about 10 million albums. And that's because they were a sort of classic 1980s band. And that was my theme song for ages. We don't have that sort of theme going on. I just was in heritage mode. And I've got Deb with me, the head of a team of voices on allpoetry.com. Hi, Deb. How are you?
I am well. How are you? I couldn't find my mute button. Sorry about that.
You're good. No, that's okay. And I have Hatter with me as well. Hi, Hatter. How are you?
I'm okay.
Excellent. Nice bit of...
Who sang that song? Who sang the intro song?
That's Ivor Davies.
Yeah, it sort of sounds like that Lion Sleeps Tonight. I think there was a Tokens.
Little.
And there's another song.
Little.
It's got that little quirky... sound to it.
It's got that little beat.
Chord progression.
Yeah, nice chord progression. You do that. So, yeah, no, it's
funny how
every stuff.
It's funny how often the word quirky comes up around you.
Yeah, it sort of does. I sort of have that sort of sense about me sometimes. Depth, for some reason, I don't know why, it just sort of floats around and taps me on the shoulder occasionally. So, we've got open poetry. We've got open poetry, which is pretty cool. And we've got a number of people who have given us poems, including yourself, Deb. And I think, Hatter, you might are going to be dropping one on the board as well. So I did hear that in dispatches, so to speak. So let's hope that's the case. And at the same time, I have a number of poems to share, and I was going to first off, if that's okay, Deb, introduce a Australian poet that I haven't read before, which is always a good thing. This is a gentleman called Leon Gellert, And Leon Gallup was certainly an every man, every person poet. Paddock. He was he wrote about World War One, and the reason he wrote about World War One was because he was a soldier, an everyday private who enlisted in the 4th Division, went to Egypt, and then went across the water to Gallipoli and took part in the in the campaign in Gallipoli until he was unfortunately too ill to fight anymore, and he was sent to Malta, whereon he got even sicker and then got sent back to Britain to rehabilitate, and tried, not successfully actually, joined the military again after having that, but then got found out and got kicked out. So I've got his book from World War One, and I've actually put up on the board a copy of the poem I'm going to read, and a copy of an image from the book. Because Leon Gallup was paired with, I think, the best Australian illustrator of the last 100 years, and that's a gentleman called Norman Lindsay. Norman Lindsay did a number of paintings and not just books. And you can see on the board the sort of death in the trenches and sort of death sitting above all with a horrible knife and incredible expression. And even the work on the arch there is quite unbelievable. So
Is that his art on that page?
No, it's Norman Lindsay. Norman Lindsay, okay. Hatter, who was, I said, a very, very famous Australian artist and illustrator. And just, you can see, as I said, one of his illustrations from the Leon Gallup book. And it's just unbelievably good. You know, he was a brilliant illustrator.
He's
so
really
this is a... he was
really
just brilliant.
Seems very familiar.
Just incredible. Anyway, so Leon Gallup book, and I've got the photo out of the book called, and this is The Last Leave, and you'll see it on the board, out of his book of World War One, Songs of a Campaign, which he published in 1918. This is The Last Leave, and it goes a little bit like this. The guns were silenced, and the silent hills had bowed their grasses to a gentle breeze. I gazed upon the vales and on the rills and whispered, what are these and what are these? These long-forgotten dead, sunken graves, some crossless with unwritten memories. They're only mourners of the moaning waves. They're only minstrels of the singing trees. And thus I mused and sorrowed wistfully. The place where they had scaled the height, that height whereon they bled so bitterly throughout each day and through each blistered night. I sat there long and listened, all things listened to. I heard the epics of a thousand trees, a thousand waves I heard, and then I knew. The waves were very old, the trees were very wise. The dead would be remembered evermore, the valiant dead that gazed upon the skies and slept in great battalions by the shore. End poem.
Yeah, it reminds me of I used to write and include in some of my verses the phrases like I died a thousand times, 100 different ways, or died 100 ways, 1,000 different times. So it reminded me. Remind me of it. It's a good little sorrowful to add on to about the middle of your piece to sort of capture your reader, and then once you got it, then you slam the door. You make him cry, or you make him heartache.
Yeah. Well, you know that, Hatter, but But yeah, no, just a very an interesting writer, not sometimes sort of rhymer, not always. But the intriguing thing is that, you know, those emotions of humour from, you know, being on the front line and being a private and seeing it all. And there's something quite sort of war and sort of interesting about that sort of observation. And beautifully paired with
back then World War One was very romanticized to go overseas and fight for your country. You know, and it's like when reality hit you, you're in Europe fighting for your life.
In trenches. Horrible. What did you think? Because I don't think I've read a Liam Gallant poem before.
No, I thought it was an excellent poem, and the read was beautiful. The title really says it all, though, The Last to Leave. And that person is always a certain type of individual to be that last person to leave, if they leave at all. So it was a parago, and I wish I could see the lines a little bit better, but between that and that photo, that artist, I have a wow on the tip of my tongue. So great share.
So I was going to do one more of my little list here before I move on to all of those people, including you, both of yourselves who put poems on the board. I'm fascinated by poets who went through a phase. It was only about 10, 20 years between about 1880 and 1900. And what they did was that they did their groups of poems in leather calf-bound tomes or books. And they're so delicate, lovely that they were deciding to put these poems into these very delicate books, but I don't know how long they thought that they would survive. And a great example of that I'm showing now, which is a purple calf leather bound book of poems by the English poet James Whitcomb Riley. And American poet James Whitcomb Riley. And this was a book that was done in about 1900. You can tell by the, or maybe a little bit later, but 1910, it's got like an Art Nouveau look to it. I'm just surprised it's in one piece, you know, because it's so, so delicate. And you sort of open it and you fear it's going to fall apart. You know, it's a little bit like that. So, but I did check before I came on, and the poem that I wanted to read was a poem that actually wasn't uploaded anywhere. So I'm just going to grab a photo of it, if that's okay. Put that forward. It's only very short, Greg. I'm going to read that and then get into the other poem. But let me try and do that. It's always fun trying to add images. It happens sort of like you think it's okay, and then it sort of doesn't extend it. Anyway, it should be up there now. It's only for brevity. It's called A Leave Taking, and it goes a little bit like this. She will not smile. Let's have a look at that. She will not smile. She will not. I marvel while I look on her. The lips are chilly and will not speak. The ghost of a lily in either cheek. Her hair are me, her hair, her hair. How helplessly my hands go there, but my caresses meet not hers. O golden tresses that thread my tears. I kiss the eyes on either lid, where her love here forever bid. I cease my weeping and smile and say, I shall be sleeping thus someday. End poem.
Okay, I got to reread the beginning.
Yeah. How helplessly my hands go there, but my caresses meet not hers, O golden tresses that thread my tears.
I love that verse. That's good.
You do? Yeah, I like the whole poem, to be honest. Deb,
yeah.
What do you think of that little brevity from James Whitcomb Riley from about 1870?
To borrow one of Sweet's words, it's stunning. It oozes love, and it can be in a romantic way. It could have been to a child, since the kisses were on eyelids. It could be so, you know, mostly the love shows not exactly which way it might be, but so much like I marvel while I look on her, like watching someone sleep. There's just such a peaceful beauty to them. Again, I say, whether it's a partner or a child or someone you daydream about, but it's a gorgeous, gorgeous brevity. Very beautiful. Great read too, but that closing stanza with the eyelids, that was just swoon-worthy stuff. Really gorgeous.
I can see I can see that fragile binding right there too. Wow.
Yeah.
Did you have a string in there?
Yes.
Just a string?
Yeah. That's really cool.
A single string that keeps it together, Hatta. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Now, I also see in my mind that I could be crying right now because the person could have passed, which would be why the lips would be chilling. And the eyelids are down and not sleeping. So it's a really, really thought-provoking, and there's so many ways to take it. But that's where I'm at right now. I am sad. I am feeling the loss. I think she died.
Yes.
Which poem?
That's the way I took it. That
the
was
one that he just
finished? James Whitcomb Riley, had it.
Okay.
And the beauty and the love blind, but sort of the loss. And by the end, when you let it sink in, you're left with just that heartbreaking loss. And then it sends you back to those chilly lips.
Yes.
And I do kiss the forehead of my loved ones when we're at the funeral. And I know that chilly feel. It's unmistakable. So it's damn. My ass actually.
Now, is that poet on the list of famous poets on the AP? Is this the...
Yes.
Right? Riley,
yes.
Is his name on there?
James, you can find James Whitcomb Riley. You can, absolutely. Yes.
Okay, cool.
He is a very well-known, writer. And I'm just looking now for which one I was going to do next. Because... I'm just looking for the. I'm going to go and do a Banjo Paterson poem that I don't think I've read before. Now I've read a lot of it.
That
right?
I've
read a lot. Of it.
You called it Deb.
I didn't mean it.
You're so good, Deb.
That book.
You're so good.
Oh, I am. Thank you. Glad I did.
So
she said to be an hour before the show. I guess we're going to hear some banjo tonight. Yep. I go, you know we are.
Exactly right. Yep. You've got it.
Well,
yep.
I would take credit for that one, but it just so happens that AP did make an announcement on the chat room earlier. So if I had money in my pocket, I would have bet that there'd be banjo patters.
It was a good bet to take.
I still think you're
that I would have done some banjo. Yeah. But this time I am not reading from The Man from Snowy River. I am reading instead from his later version called Saltbush Bill JP. And this version was the version of Saltbush Bill JP that was square and small. And the reason for that was because it was the so-called trench edition. And so it had a wider and thicker cover so soldiers could put it in their kit and have it with them. And so and Banjo wasn't there to actually say which poem should go in. He was actually working as an ambulance driver on the front. And so there's this sort of thing at the front of the book that says, well, look, we want to say sorry to Banjo because he's not there and hasn't been able to actually go and, take part in this because, you know, he's been too busy out at the front. But anyway, I can actually put this one up. Think, hopefully, onto the board because there is a link for this one on the All Poetry. So I'll always try to use the All Poetry link if I can. And I think it's quite different for banjo, actually. You can tell me, you know, because I'm sort of, you know, obviously. I think anything's different by banjo. It's not copying and pasting, of course. So I am going to read from the image of this book, which is the trench edition of Saltbush Bill JP. In fact, I don't need to read from the page. I can read from the actual book, can't I? Because it's in front of me. And so it's this little, tiny little book, like a children's book, for want of a better word. And it's very, very delicate, beautiful little book. This is As Long As Your Eyes Are Blue. See what you think of this, Hatter. Reminds me of you. Wilt thou love me sweet when my hair is grey and my cheeks shall have lost their hue, when the charms of youth shall have passed away, will your love as of old prove true? For the looks may change and the heart may range and the love be no longer fond. Wilt thou love with truth in the years of youth and away to the years beyond? Oh, I love you, sweet, for your locks of brown and the blush on your cheek that lies. But I love you most for the kindly heart that I see in your sweet blue eyes. For the eyes are signs of the soul within, of the heart that is leal and true. And mine own sweetheart, I shall love you still, just as long as your eyes are blue. For the locks may bleach and the cheeks of peach may be reft of their golden hue, but mine own sweetheart, I shall love you still, just as long as your eyes are blue. In poem.
I could have wrote that.
That's what I mean, Hatter. You could have written that. It's so close to your style of writing and what you would write, yeah?
Wow. It is.
I just thought you'd find it really almost spooky how close it is to your style of writing and what you would write.
You have no idea how close.
Content, no.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I love this poem.
It's beautiful.
I'm going to save this.
It is on All Poetry as well. I just couldn't copy and paste it. So if you type up As Long As Your Eyes Are Blue, you'll find a link to it on the site, Tata. I just couldn't cut and paste it. But I have to admit, I read it this morning, and I thought to myself, Jesus Christ, that's so spooky. Because if you'd put Hatter at the bottom of that, I would have said, yeah, that's one of your poems.
You know what? I would have too.
Me too.
Wow.
And then I would have growled at you, Hatter, and asked you what the hell was wrong with his green eyes.
Oh yeah, you can just see the conversation, can't you? I just, as I said, I read it this morning, and I just thought, wow, like, you know, just wow.
When was this published? What year was this published?
This book was in front of me, Hatter. I'm just going to turn to it now because it's a little trench edition book. It was published in
1917.
104 years ago.
Oh, man.
That was before you were incarnated, Hatter.
I am madly jealous of something I didn't know existed. Wow.
How's that? Anyway, I thought I would surprise you because you all thought I was getting just an everyday banjo comp. But little did you know that I had been doing my research, Hatter, and I found, I think, a poem that, as I said, you could have written, and I would have been unsurprised if you had.
Wow. Wow. You know, when I first came to AP, I went looking for somebody I could relate to and started reading everybody's poetry, trying to find somebody that seemed familiar so I could, you know, pick their brain and maybe become friends with and everything. And I ran into somebody that surprisingly, I thought, wrote very similar to me, remarkably so. That, in fact, when I mentioned where is Alice, that's who I'm speaking about. That's who I'm speaking about. Is it
right?
And she did. We did some collabs together.
Yes.
And this is the closest thing. It's just so familiar. I'm blown away. This is. I should be careful what I write. They could sue me. It's so close.
There you go. What did you think, Deb? Did you get that sense of familiarity? I'm sure you did.
Yeah, it was just like one step off from his normal rhyme meter and flow, but it's still close enough that it was just like, I too, if it would have been on a list, say on a night where we were writing to one of his poems or where we were reading his poems for him, I could have easily been convinced that this was really his, especially with the blue eyes.
Yes.
And the I have to say it, I'm sorry, but the marshmallow effect that you get hit with at the end.
Yes.
I could have definitely. It's an amazing poem, like I said, and I definitely would have poked him a little about only blue eyes, but it's an amazing poem. And I love the fact that he said to you, you could have convinced me that I wrote it, you know, so.
Yeah. Wow. Almost your eyes are blue.
Some great choices.
I got a new favorite banjo poem.
There you go. There you go, Hatter. I've convinced you, and it was, as I said, in the trench edition, and so he never got to look at it. He was too busy driving ambulances. But there were shorter poems and poems that were more likely to have people, you know, remind themselves of home than the big epics. So they were quite short books. So, but I've got a brilliant copy, as you've seen. Of that particular book, a beautiful little illustration on yeah. on the front. Lovely.
I always felt that I needed to go to Australia in my lifetime. This goes back even when I was a kid. I don't know why, but maybe if not visit, maybe it's coming home.
I don't know. It's interesting, isn't it? I was fascinated when I found it. I really was.
Wow.
And so not one of Banjo's better known poems, but really, really, really interesting. So there you go. Yeah. That was my starting point for sort of poems that I found. I could do one more, Hatter, if you like. I have another Banjo poem, but it's not the Banjo poem is not, you know, it's meant to, you know, it's not like one that you've written. Yeah, I think that was kind of special, but I have another one, and this was off his book that he did that was a children's book, you know, probably the second best known illustrator in Australia at the time was it was Norman Lindsay again, so it was the illustrator of the time. Who illustrated this book, and I've just got the front piece there. The Animals Noah Forgot is the name of the book, and it was published in, I think, in memory in the 1920s. I've got a little poem that I want to read from the first edition, of course, of The Animals Noah Forgot. And if I was going to choose one, you know, Hatter, that I would go for one of my favourites. And, of course, it's if I can make it work, of course it's The Platypus, because you would always choose The Platypus. Because it's
have you
know,
read
so
this
vaguely
before?
Ridiculous.
Before you read, though, tell me about the art. I see the koala. I see the platypus. What are the other two critters? I can't figure it out.
You've got, let me go to the front page. You've got the platypus down the bottom, and you've got the, probably that looks like a little wallaby or bandicoot. Then you've got the koala playing the banjo, and you've got the cockatoo
that the banjo is a double tribute there, where it could be because he's the Banjo Patterson, but also because of Waltzing Matilda,
koala.
Maybe?
Yep, exactly right.
Cool. Really, really awesome part.
Yeah. So that's the it's 1933. It was first published, and I'm going to read the Banjo Patterson poem from The Animals Noah Forgot. I'm going to read the Old Man Platypus, and we have there the duck, the platypus, and I think we might have the wallaby. But anyway, let's have a look as we go through. This is Old Man Platypus, and it goes a little bit like this. Far from the trouble and toil of town, where the reed beds sweep and shiver, look at a fragment of velvet brown, Old Man Platypus drifting down, drifting along the river. And he plays and dives in the river bends in a style that is most elusive, with few relations and fewer friends, for Old Man Platypus descends from a family most exclusive. He shares his burrow beneath the bank with his wife and his son and daughter. The roots of the reeds and the grasses rank, and the bubbles show where our hero sank, to its entrance underwater. Safe in their burrow below the falls, they live in a world of wonder, where no one visits and no one calls. They sleep like little brown billiard balls, with their beaks tucked neatly under. And he talks in a deep, unfriendly growl as he goes on his journey lonely. For he's no relation to fish nor fowl, nor to bird nor beast, nor to horned owl. In fact, he's the one and only in poem.
Wow.
What a beautiful cut that has.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was going to go down a different, a different way. Go ahead, Deb. I'm sorry. Get my shit together.
No, I'm still heartbroken over the title part about the animals know or forgot.
The animals.
Like,
yeah. Great title.
It's heartbreaking. I never looked at it from that point of view before, and it's very, very sad right from the title. But the old man, the platypus, is amazing, right? And we all always love listening to you read banjo, so you can't go wrong there, no matter what you bring up, is because your joy shows as you read it. And that's what we, for lack of a better word, feed off of. Beautiful share.
Thanks. Yeah, I just sort of went reading, as you do, this morning when I knew that I'd be doing the show. So we've sort of had, half an hour of me reading some different pieces by some different poets from the original books. And so I just thought it'd be fun to do, that's all, because you don't get to read a lot of them. And I was blown away when I found the banjo piece, the first one. So I definitely had to share that.
Yeah, it reminded me of the, right off the get-go, the, what was the group name? They sang the unicorn.
Oh.
There were green alligators and long neckies, some humpty back camels and some chimpanzees, some captain rats and elephants.
Yes.
Sure as you're born, loveliest of all was the unicorn. The Irish Rover. The Irish Rover.
Yes. 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 It does have a sort of lilt to it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Right off the bat, just the title before you read anything, that flashed it in my head.
Yeah.
The animals I forgot, because that's, the unicorn was playing a silly game of hide and seek.
Yes.
He didn't get on the boat.
So, anyway, there you go. So, okay, I've taken up 30 minutes of me reading some poetry from my poetry books. Hatter, did you want to put one of yours on the board?
Yeah, I could do that.
So there you go. Part of my old poetry book collection. So it's always nice to get
this
out
one,
occasionally. Yeah.
This one I was going to work on a little more. It's from the past.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you guys have ever read this or heard this. Pretty sure you haven't.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Okay. Let's do it.
Let me get up to it. Come on.
And I should say to my thanks to Lynn James, doing front page six, who's put my poem up on the page.
Yeah, somebody keeps chatting, and I can't grab the link. Hold on.
No.
Oh, is it up there? Oh, it's up there. Hold on.
I'm looking.
Oh, I'm getting it. It's my fault. I was talking to Cal. I'll get your poem off the board and put it there, Grumpy.
No, say hello to Cal. No chat. Blake with his kids.
No chatting on the line. Oh, I got a bad joke for you. I don't know if you guys heard it.
Yes.
I think I did say it the other night, but maybe you didn't hear it. What did the janitor say when he jumped out of the closet?
I don't know.
Surprise. Supplies.
Oh, yes. Well, it's bad, but at least it's not, horribly bad. It's bad, it's in the bad rain, Chatter. But,
I know.
Anyway, you have your poem on the board. You because you put it there.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, I got it then. Now this is one I'm going to tweak, and what I'll do is I'm going to read it, and then after I tweak it, we'll compare it down the road sometime. That's the thought. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. It's called All That I Have. I think it has potential. It has potential. I wrote it. I don't know how long ago it was. It goes like this. I was waiting for the parade to start, but you never walked by. They said it was they said if I was happy, so I decided not to lie. I didn't say that right. They asked if I was happy, so I decided not to lie. A light, you say, to brighten my day. I wish you good luck with that. The end of my tunnel is darker than most. In fact, it's blacker than black is black. It's always darker at the other end. I will never, ever have to pretend to see a light where there was none. I learned to walk but started to run. You aren't amongst all the things that make me happy, so I sit here wondering, did you take the light that was supposed to be mine? Now I see, I now understand, you left me here, and that was your plan, to leave me here alone, cold and sad, because you took it all that I had. No silver linings, no happy ends, no lights to find me, no benefit friends. I think I've gone too far to believe that you are out there trying to find me. And if you go back and start anew, I think I would never talk to you. With my heart still beating, and because it's true, I would have let you go because before I met you. I would have watched you happy and spend your heart. I would have stayed away too far apart for you to remember your love so fine before you could remember you were once mine. How did the decade turn into two, me hiding in a cave still loving you? To me, it's not over, and I'm falling apart. I'll die knowing why, my broken heart. 4 months. Mm. Okay, it wasn't that long ago. I think it was a draft. I was writing it, and I put it in the draft and forgot about it, and I pulled it out. And so I think it's older than 4 months.
Yep. I think it might be right, Pat. But I agree with you. I think it's got probably five or six stanzas that really work really, really well.
It's really rough. I agree with you. It needs to be polished. I think there's enough there.
I agree with you, and I would almost, if it was mine, sort of take the first couple of stanzas, get rid of the next three, and start again at did you take the light that's supposed to be mine, because that's such a great line. And it then rolls into sort of the now I see, I now understand, and the dashes and the thinking. And it just sort of gathers pace from that line. It's like the poem's pushing itself up a hill, and it gets to that, and now the light that was supposed to be mine just starts rolling down the hill. You know, it just starts picking up pace as it goes. And often when that's the case, it's best just to get rid of the hill.
Yeah, I agree with you. Anytime you see those three dots that I put, it usually means it's still working. So you have to go back that line and smooth it out somehow.
Yeah, it works,
and there's
so
a lot of those in here. There's a lot of them.
The three dots work. Yeah, no, they work here. I wouldn't be worried about getting rid of those. I think they actually give it a classic kind of hesitancy without needing to use words.
Yeah, no silver linings, no happy ends. Hey, got no benefit friends either. Damn.
What did you think of this one?
Well, this one is one of them ones, again, that you get smacked with the emotion of it, with his ache and heartbreak and like almost damning ever meeting to begin with because it hurts so bad now. A couple of the spots, it was like your thought drifted so it pulled you out of your flow or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a little, as far as you read, just a little, but like I said, I was hit so hard with the pain of the truth of the gut-wrenchingness that came from you as you read it. It might have sat in the drafts, but it's very powerful, and I think way, 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 way worth finishing whatever those fine-tuning pieces are that would make you happy, because you got to hold on to it and like post it to your page so more people see it, because it's very powerful. I see it's already on my screen.
So
yeah, reading through it, I remember the frustration that things weren't going together. I did like some of the lines in it. But yeah, it wasn't pieced together very well either.
Well, it's just a couple of spots. And yeah, I agree with HP.
It's
just a couple of spots where your frustration was showing, and it
the rest of it
kicked
flow.
In flow for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okie dokie. Well, we have got some listeners that are sitting out there, Deb, and one of them is Cal Chinowski, who has put one of his poems up on the topic board. So have fun, Cal, drinking that beer, watching the lake. This is his poem from an hour ago, Standing on Rims, and he's actually, what looks to me, got a photo of canola there, if we had to guess. And, of course, it goes a little bit like this. Standing on the rims of earth, peering to the molten core, chasing shadows on graffiti benches, drinking the same beer as homeless. Machine running gears, murmurs of conversation, a nude silhouette at lakes of eternity, red lamps, lace allure. African ebony dancing from the hip, jungle's lush green painted on concrete. Smoke billows, its thick plume, into perfectly azure skies, heated streets, shuffling feet, daily revolutions. Metamorphosized, bodies suspended on hillsides, two eyes staring from the shore. End poem.
Billows, its thick plume, to perfectly azure skies. Now, this is written to the picture, you think? There's a picture that came after.
I think the picture might have come after, because he's looking at a lake with a beer. And unless he's sitting on the corner of a field of canola, he probably is not seeing that. But it's a cute photo.
Is that what that is? I thought mustard.
I think it's canola. But Cal will probably correct me on the board.
Yeah.
But I think it looks like... There you go.
Machine running gears, murmurs as conversation, new silhouette, the lakes of eternity, red lamps. At first I thought this was machine running gears, murmurs of conversation. Is he comparing harvest machinery to...
I think he's just in reflective mode, Hatter. I think he's
sort
of looking forward to just... seeing different things in the clouds and the water and just bouncing it out there. That's what I reckon he's doing, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Deb, what did you think?
I thought that the imagery in this was really awesome. I like the word choices. The standing on the rims of the earth, you kind of can think that, because for as far as the eye can see, all you can see is the yellow tips of the canola all the way across. And peering to the molten core, chasing shadows on the graffiti benches, drinking the same beer as homeless. And just the thought of them being homeless and sitting there with that beer is a sad thought already. And there's something else just about African ebony dancing from the hip, jungle's lush green painted on concrete. smoke billows its thick plume into perfectly azure skies. The imagery is really, really off the hook in this movie. I think that photo to vivid life and gave it a little bit of sentiment too, with contemplation from that he might have found in that beer. It was an awesome
show. Well, exactly right. So, and I think we might, Deb, get you to do, you've got two poems up on the book. We might get you to do one of them now. What do you think?
Sure, that works. I could do that. Mine are kind of dark, though.
That's okay. Because we've got a poem from In Chains who has a pretty dark poem as well. So we'll do the In Chains poem after one of yours, Deb.
Awesome. Okay. Let me shoot back over there because I was writing. I think I'll go to the second one I found first. Okay. You there with it in 1 second? Here we go. Okay. There it is. And this is called Analgesic Aftershock with a Side Order of Head Spins. Splintering. Ripping into two mirrored halves. The shadow side and the ghost. Smacked with double the aches, with the darkness now my host. Shackled. Chained to the hot electric ebony that digs into bruised ankle flesh, cutting scar lines stained purple as black and blue patches mesh. Fracturing, thump, pulls, hits, and staring beats, and the linoleum swallows up my torso, bars in a prison cell. Eyes blink blinded from the light flow, bathing me in the necromancer's gloom. Spotlighted, marked with lanolin lipstick blood red, on skulls that are not alive, but not dead. Ash gray pigments cover twin face skin, then the endorphins speed to the heads, rotating peptides as the pendulum swing. And point spinning.
It's interesting. It's an interesting poem because it with the single word, you wouldn't think that it sort of gives you that power, but it does. It gives you the ability to stop and to sit on that word for a little bit, and so to emphasize it for the rest of the stanza, and it becomes a really important piece of what the rest of the lines say. So I thought it was very elegantly written, cleverly written. Hannah, did you want to say something about this piece?
Thank you very much.
This is about as abstract as I think I've ever read you write. Am I wrong, or is that sort of accurate?
No, I dabble now and then.
Reminds me a little of Kathy, actually, in some ways.
Yeah. I love the trapping me like bars in a prison cell, eyes blink blinded from the white flow bathing me in the necromancer's glow. I want to make it rhyme.
It rhymes.
Just his card.
It rhymes. It rhymes.
Yeah, I like it. I like it, Deb.
Sometimes. But you got to check out the song afterwards, too, Hatter. It's called Pendulum by Pearl Jam.
Okay.
That and the photo were sort of, and that was the influence.
And a gold for that one, Deb, in the competition to that image, which is a terrific effort because, of course, that's a competition by Andrew Dawson, and he's no give, and tough person to get a gold out of.
Oh, I didn't know that. Thank you. That's awesome.
The picture part of the prompt?
The picture was the prompt, Hattie. You had to write the picture up.
The one at the top, right? Okay.
The picture at the top is the prompt, and put the song at the bottom in my mind while I was writing, so I added it.
You added it in.
Anyway. So I nodded to it at the end with the rotating peptides as the pendulum spin. It was just a little nod to the tune.
Yeah. No, very neat. Well, I've read a whole heap of poems, Deb, but I haven't read one of mine yet. In Chains, it's been nice enough to throw one of my poems up on the front page, and I think you were nice enough to actually nominate it in the first place, Deb. So I guess I should read it. I read this piece for Crystal. I wrote this piece for Crystal, actually, last week, Hatter. It was, 3 days ago that I wrote it. And for me, it's a little bit unusual because it's an AABB rhyme scheme. And I don't do AABB that often. I typically am an ABAB writer. But anyway, here we go. This is up on the front page at the minute. This is Palette of Summer. It goes a little bit like this. Summer burns pale liquors of green. It turns and singes every scene. Losses of vibrancy interview. Lapis lazuli blue, the sky's dark hue. Clouds reflecting seas near a shore, entwined upon navy their core. Here waves and sand tossed of breakers in brumbies embossed. Waters unfurl upon deep ochre soils, shades tarnished burgundy royal. Years in age as first dawned, red of all early corroboree stormed. Until eve, when Southern Cross high, talisman beams down richly nigh, beams opal on a singed land, sun's burning vista, if in outback stand. In poem.
Warm fuzzy. Summer burns pale withers of green, turns and singes every scene. Probably this is wrong, but are things starting to get green in Australia after the fires burned through?
The thread here was the colours of summer, Hatter, and we don't have a lot of colour here in summer, because what happens is that the sun gets so bloody hot that it drains the green of the colour and it goes sort of grey. And so if you want to talk about the colours, you've got to talk about the colours in the sky, and you've got to talk about the colours in the ocean, and you've got to talk about the colours in the sand, and then in the sky, because the colour in the grass and in the trees gets drained away, in my head, into those places.
Yeah. Yeah, there was nothing more brilliant when I was up at the lake with those rich people. There was nothing more outstanding than the night sky, crisp night sky.
Yes, and the night sky in Australia is just marvellous in the outback. And we do have a caller. Hello, and welcome 720. How are you, 720?
I am 720.
Hello, sweet. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, AP?
I'm doing well. I'm on a bit of a roll. Sweet. I've read about 6 poems for the hour, so that's not too bad. Only one of mine, though, so that's you know, I'm not overstaying my welcome. So it's been mainly older poems, but I have found a banjo poem that I swear Hatter could have written.
Oh, amazing.
No, I have. I have. Have I not done that, Hatter?
It's spooky. Can we read it again?
It is. I can read it again. I'm going to go back to the videotape so Sweet can hear it. And I'm going to go back into the history a couple of pages because I put a photo of it up. So that's I'm going to photo, so bear with me. And I'm back three pages. And just listen to it and tell me at the end if you think this has had up. This is Banjo Paterson from 1917, As Long As Your Eyes Are Blue.
Okay.
Won't thee love me sweet when... I'm going to go to the book. Hold on. I've got the book, so I'm going to go to the book. The actual book, page 32 of this trench edition, As Long As Your Eyes Are Blue. Here we go. Wilt thou love me sweet when my hair is grey and my cheeks shall have lost their hue, when the charms of youth shall have passed away, with your love as of old prove true? For the looks may change and the heart may range and the love be no longer fond. Wilt thou love with truth in the years of youth and away to the years beyond? Oh, I love you, sweet, for your locks of brown and the blush on your cheek that lies. But I love you most for the kindly heart that I see in your sweet blue eyes. For the eyes are signs of the soul within, of the heart that is leal and true. And mine own sweetheart, I shall love you with still, just as long as your eyes are blue. For the locks may bleach and the cheeks of peach may be reft of their golden hue, but mine own sweetheart, I shall love you still, just as long as your eyes are blue. End poem.
I agree with Deborah Lee. Not only would I say that Hatter wrote that poem, but I would say that Hatter wrote that poem for me.
There you go.
I knew it.
Absolutely, that would have been a Hatter sweet people.
It actually gave me goosebumps. I reread it. And wait a minute. I went back and read part of it.
Yeah, that's very Hatterish. Very Hatter-like. Oh, wow, that is kind of creepy. Wow.
Isn't that amazing? He's 104 years old.
It is. Wow.
Speaking of that, I told Hatter it was him reincarnated. So then Hatter said that maybe when he visits Australia, he won't be visiting. He'll be going back. So I forgot to say, he finally arrived. If he gets out of the airport and drops to the ground and kisses the ground, then I think that he will have convinced himself that, yes, he definitely came from Oz.
He's there.
I can see him.
I think he'll convince himself that he's in Australia when he actually pans the creeks and finds some gold, Deb. Then he'll say, I'm here. Yeah, I reckon that's good.
Something's calling.
That's an awesome.
Which we'll do.
Yeah, he broke into the inner rhyme.
Yeah.
The inner rhyme thing.
Yeah. A little bit of inner rhyme. Yep. So, it's sort of spooky in some way, and the sweet, I missed the sweet stuff the first time around, but you're absolutely right. It could have been written for sweet, really. It could have been.
Could have been.
Don't you know that all the poems that are written with the word sweet in them are for sweet? I remember the one. I remember the one that Pretty Bird wrote, and that was sweet too. So it's just.
I like hearing that. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
There are definitely poems that belong to me.
I can't wait for Joy to come home so I can read it to her. Should I let you?
I've now got the link from the site on the board, Hatter, so you can actually copy the link from the board.
Yeah, I grabbed the link, the actual.
Oh, you got it.
Verse. Yeah, from the site.
I think that you should read it to Joy and not tell her till afterward that it's Banjo and see if she thinks it's you first.
I reckon she will. I guarantee okay, she'll
cool.
think it's you.
I will. She likes my poetry, believe it or not.
Well, we can check in tomorrow. Right. We're back on the line for money tomorrow, so we can check out whether Joy thought that piece was you.
Yeah.
All right.
We know it wasn't Poe or AP.
I've been trying to get her to call.
Sorry,
in.
We've got Frank online. Hello, Frank. How are you?
Yeah, hello there, my friends. Unfortunately, I can't really stay on much long.
I'd
just stop by.
No, it's all good. And you actually put a SoundCloud in, didn't you, Frank, from Emma?
Yeah. I was able to put one up there. I hope you enjoy it.
Okay.
All of you. Yeah.
Let me grab the poem itself and then play the SoundCloud. So while you're here. So I've just put the lady and Madeline up on the board, and I'm now going to Blog Talk Studio, and I'm playing it for you, Frank.
Thank you.
Here we go.
Roderick Usher, the poor gent that was my old friend, had presented himself to me as a hoary and fragile man seen, and his peculiar mien was that of a scared namby-pamby, for the celeritous tear in his dilated eyes was truly palpable. The house of Usher was towering and had a dark gothic shade, covered by the menacing guise of the sable eyes of the ravens, on the gable roof of a dilapidated mansion nearby the adjacent town, but it had a noticeable thin crack extending to the front of the house. The reflection of the moon had shone upon the uptenebrated night, as the sound of the flapping wings and croaks of ravens were audible, and the brazen wind thus blew the eerie echoes of the howling over the damp and dank moat erected on the top of a steep rock. I could hear the dreaded gnawing of the horrid rats with their beady eyes, as they had gnawed at the fading wood of the walls of visible erosion, and the sturdy planks of the floors would creak upon every footstep taken, but an unknown weeping and breathing had resonated behind the creepy walls. Flashing lightning and roaring thunder had increased by the passing minutes. The roaring dewdrops of rain fell upon the slippery roof in glass windows. The hour of the vintage clock had rung in the parlour below the rust. I had sensed the presence of an unbidden visitor that was no stranger. Suddenly, I had heard the scream of a woman. In the gasping of Roderick, I had dashed from my chamber to find him completely discomposed, for his terrifying eyes were evidently bulging with heightened trepidation, and it seemed he had witnessed an unthinkable ghost in person. Will she not be here anon? Is she not hurrying to upbraid me for my haste? Have I not heard her footstep on the stair? Do I not distinguish that heavy and horrible beating of her heart? Madman, madman, I tell you that she now stands without the door. Who? I asked. The Lady Madeline, Behold! In the poem.
Holy.
Freaky.
That was the full press, right? Goodness me.
Oh, there you go.
Wow.
Just bringing back my old days of acting there.
I was going to say, I sounded like you were on stage. I thought we were in the middle of a sort of, you know, Shakespearean sort of presentation. But anyway, there you go.
Yeah, I got a little, sounded, what was Scrooge's partner's name, Marley?
Oh, I don't know. Good question, Heather.
I think his name was, well, he comes back as the ghost. He's the ghost that rattles the chains. That's his partner,
yeah, right.
Marley.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
Then a little telltale heart, in there. With
yeah.
The noises.
Yeah.
So like the house and walls kept the sounds of battlefield, you know, the noises after the animals feasting on the bodies, and a little telltale heart, you can hear it.
Okay.
But yeah,
well,
I got it.
There you go. Done. Well done, Heather. No, thank you. Dick, did you want to say a few words on the piece? Bye, Frank.
Yeah, it was creepy good. The voices, the Vincent Price meets Edgar Allan Poe kind of read was like wicked. And then, holy cow, that screechy, sadistic Satanist growl thing you had going on was like, holy smokes. It was a very brilliantly dramatic read poem. Bravo.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
And Sweet, did you want to say a few words about Frank's poem?
Oh, Roderick, the last king of the Goths, buried alive. He did such a lovely job telling us his story. I personally do enjoy a good Goth story and the telling of him and the way you spoke and the way you took him down the creepy walls and down to the grave and down to everything. You did such a lovely job and such a great Elizabethan form. Your writing, your speaking, the way you, everything, the imagery, and all of it, you did a fabulous job, and I really, really loved how you said of the madman, I tell you that she now stands without the door, and your nod to Edgar Allan Poe and his ravens. You just did a really great job with this. I thought it was quite well done.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, sir. I'm glad that you gave
You're
me that
welcome.
Forum to be able to share this piece tonight.
No, well done, Frank. Well done. Now, you've got to disappear quickly, I'm thinking. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go. Yeah, it's almost midnight here. I just wanted to say, stop by and say thanks and good luck on the show. And I'll listen to it afterwards. Take care. Take care, my friend.
Thank you for your help. Thanks for contributing. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Frank.
Buenas noches. Take care.
Okie doke. Thank you again, Frank. And we've now got Joe is listening into us from the UK or in chains, and I've put her poem up on the board, Where Sadness Lays, and it goes a little bit like this. I find in field leaf-shaped flowers upon old willow tree a cottage-like little run-down house on the prairie, black shingle oak overlooking burnt sienna beds of crimson, rose and shades of sun scald. Still afternoon sky is blanketed in sirocco, mauve lilies that were mauve lilies floating gently downstream. Upon river's edge, inky blank eye shadow, upon a long-lost woman in distress. Pale violet teardrops upon her long silken dress. graffiti of embers behind her slowly, gothic footsteps, bird song muffled in stormy rhyme, rain poured down from heaven, my ear canals baptized. End
poem. Oh, wow. I love the ending. Rain poured down from heaven, my ear canals baptized. Nicely done, Joe.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful piece. It just channels this real sort of pain and sorrow, it just builds its way like a sort of dark river that sort of passes by. The really elegant write. And Joe does, I have to say, write very elegantly and eloquently. Sweet, did you want to say a few words about Joe's piece?
I love the imagery and the contrast of imagery, especially still afternoon skies blanketed in Sirocco, especially since one is saying it's a still afternoon sky, but it's also blanketed in a very high wind kind of world. So I love the confusion, the chaos within that. And the other line I love is, upon river's edge, inky black eyeshadow upon a long lost woman. That is a brilliant line that I'm jealous I didn't get to use, but that is just beautiful. I love inky black eyeshadow upon a long lost woman. I think that's just beautiful. Very, very well done. And it fits the title, Where the Sadness Lay.
Yes. Yes, it does indeed. Deb, did you want to say a few words about Joe's piece?
Well, for starters, I was going to say it's nice to see her back and it was a very pleasant surprise to see her poem on the board. She had been away for a while, so I'm glad. And she has this way with words that are unmistakably her, like with the violet tears, mm-hmm. I think it is. I can't find. To hate when that happens. towards the beginning. And hazel eyes reflect the golden tones of the horizon. Bodies move in the heat of the slow motion jazz beat. But where are they? I thought they're... Maybe I misunderstood. I don't know. I thought there was violet.
So Joe was gone for a while? Joe was gone for a while?
Well, yeah. She had a couple of things she was dealing with, and she had been ill for a while, and I hadn't seen her around, and obviously she's back. But down here, that's why I can't find it, because I clicked the wrong page, and I'm on. Okay. I'm just totally losing my mind, and I'm not going to find those violet tears because I clicked the wrong page, and now I can't get back to the page because I'm trying to rush. But I was really there. It is. Okay. Now where are those violet tears? Because I know I heard them. But mauled of lilies floating downstream upon river's edge, inky black eyeshadow upon a long-lost woman in distress, pale violet teardrops upon her long silken dress. It was just the soft, sad details of her are perfect with the picture. And by some of the details, you know, you can sort of see it being from Joe's perspective. So it's really very powerful and dark. But one more time, Joe, it was nice to get your poem, and I'm glad you're back.
Absolutely. Thanks, Joe. Sweet.
Yes.
I have your piece,
yes.
Summer Heat. Would you be kind enough to read it for us, please?
I sure will. Summer heat by Sweet Pea. Porch swing sway and ice melts and sweet tea drinks. Droplets of moisture bead on pearl buttons of the summer dress. And hazel eyes reflect the gold tones of the horizon. Bodies move in the heat of a slow motion jazz beat. The shimmers of incandescent clothes float on sidewalks. Naked muscles twitch, scorching bat like iron, black eyeliner smiles. Evaporations of inhibitions drown in the cloud of humid thickness. Butterfly kisses pummel summer heat into submission. Sunburned skins hiss as lovers ooze into torrid positions. End poem.
Well,
just for me.
Any poem? Yeah, well, you absolutely, had a any poem that puts you in a torrid position. I'm happy to go along with the ride for, so to speak. But I mean, I think it's interesting, Sweet, that you also had the black eyeliner. As per Joe's prompt, there was that continuity, but this poem went far more towards the heavy liquor sort of end of night than Joe's did. There's a slight difference in tone and sensation.
Yeah.
Patter, did you want to say some words about the first?
Yeah, no, it was an honest question. You got the hazel eyes, summer dress.
Yes. Yes. Well, the summer dress in the is not quite on, I have to say. The summer dress has decided
naked
to detach itself from the particular lady in question, Patter.
Yes,
Pat. Butterfly kisses.
Yes. In torrid position.
And the sunburned skin that hisses. That just hurts.
Yes.
Well, if it's torrid, it's going to have to do something, Hatter. It's not going to be boring.
Oh, it was for Sky. I see the difference. Okay, sorry.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I sort of try torrid positions at these particular times, and I think of chiropractors right in front of me, much less physiotherapists. Anyway, Deb, did you want to say some words about the poem?
Yes, I think that this is awesome. All the little details from the pearl buttons on that dress. And you had commented on the eyeliner. I believe those hazel eyes were in Joe's poem, too, so there was a little bit of a segue between those two. Way different in the feel, though. Shimmers of incandescent ghosts float from sidewalks. So there wasn't total sensuality in there, because I'm sorry, sensual is amazing, but if there was a ghost floating around, I think it would sort of dull the moment. So it freaked me out for a minute there. It's very cool and totally sweet. And hey, isn't that you in the photo?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's me. Mm-hmm.
Yep, clearly.
Yeah.
And congrats on pending, too.
I just saw that.
Hey, what's that supposed to be? That doesn't look right.
I think
what?
It should be Sweet.
It's sweet in a swing, wrapped in a scarf.
It just oozes. Oh, it's just, I zoomed in on it. Now I see it went around her. If you didn't know it went around her back, you're going, what the hell is shooting out of her?
Well, that makes a slight difference, Hatter. As far as, if I hadn't have seen that, I wouldn't have thought it was right, but there you go. So,
well, I was confused.
I'm glad you picked up the detail. I now have because Rebecca's been sort of sitting on the board forever, and we have her piece, and Deb very kindly has put it in the studio. So I'm going to play the piece by Rebecca, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. Song, Rebecca, that's really cute, and just the production that you've done there in terms of getting the different pieces of the music and lining it up such that it sort of repeated itself immediately thereafter is damn clever. So putting to one side the poem for a tick, just the way that you did of the piece, I thought was really impressive. And but going to the actual idea of the poem, if I could for a tick, I usually don't quote back quotes, but I'm going to on this particular occasion. One of my favourites by Aaron Sorkin from The West Wing. It talks about friendship, and it talks about what people do and what real friendship means. And the quote goes, "This guy's walking down the street when he falls in a hole. The walls are so steep he can't get out. The doctor passes by and the guy shouts up, 'Hey, can you help me out?' The doctor writes a prescription, throws it down in the hole and moves on. then a priest comes along and the guy shouts up, "Father, I'm down in this hole. Can you help me out?" Priest writes out the prayer, throws it down in the hole and moves on. Then a friend walks by. "Hey, Joe, it's me." And the friend jumps in the hole. Our guy says, "Are you stupid? Now we're both down here." The friend says, "Yeah, but I've been down here before, and I know the way out." End comment. Deb, did you want to say a few words about this?
Yes, I do, and great comment. Back, I'm like blown away here between the poem and your mad skills, man. I'm just realizing that this is from the same image that I wrote for Andrew Lawson, and we both got awards. So congrats to you too. And like, I'm just nearly speechless here. This is like, I think the third song I've heard you do. And each one, you seem to put a little more skill into. And I think AP had mentioned the overlapping and you blew me away. I am totally impressed. Your song, your production, your singing, your first line, lips like morphine, eyes like moonbeams, flipping to extremes. It's excellent, and I'm stuttering, so that's usually an indicator. Well done.
Thank you, Deb. Sweet. Did you want to say a few words about Rebecca's post?
Oh, I don't know if I could say a few words. But man, all I can tell you, girl, is preach your preach. This is so fantastic. You need to be on a soapbox on top of the world and saying everything you've got to say. I cannot agree with you more. There is a certain part of this world that thinks holier than thou. And AP, what you said, your comment, I love and I adored, because we can't stand side by side and watch somebody do something horrific and horrible, not say a word, walk on by. I'm not one of those people that can do that. My mouth tends to get me in trouble more often than not. My opinions tend to make me what is known as a rebel. So be it. I'll be the rebel and stand up for what's right every single time. And I really think you should just say what you need to say every single time. And I really enjoyed your author's notes, too. They were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Love this.
Yep, okay.
Love the way you put it forward, too. Great, great talent.
Thank you, Sweet. Now, Hedda, I noted that a few minutes ago that you put a poem on the board.
Yeah, that was the that's Holly Jamestown, My Alice. That's one of the ones we wrote,
right,
collab together. And it's I need a female voice to read her part.
Right. Well, we've got a few of those. Who did you want to do that?
I don't know. You choose. I don't know who would be better.
I'm going to choose. I'm choosing Sweet. So, tell me, Hedda, you're doing the verses, which, because I'm just trying to make sense of this for Sweet, yeah?
The HJ, that's Holly Jamestown. So any verse that ends in it, yeah. And once you see your it's for the
ends with HJ, then that would be Sweet that's doing it. So
yeah,
he is going to
Sweet
do
starts.
Stanzas 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, 10,
yeah, it should be every
11.
It should be two verses. It should be two verses.
Yeah, two or three
each.
Yeah, two or three.
Yeah, then
so the verse
increases
above HJ. Yeah. Now, Sweet, have I completely confused you, or do you understanding.
No,
I've got it.
I've got it.
Perfect.
Two stanzas, and then Jay Hatter.
Yep.
Two stanzas, and then Jay. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah,
it's pretty much alter.
Okay,
got it.
Okay.
All right.
Beautiful. Okay, righto. Well, if that's the case, I am going to leave it in your capable hands, Sweet and Hatter.
Okay.
Okay.
By the story of Alice J. Lee by Jay Hatter and Holly Jameson. Chance meeting at the hardware store, intrigued by his reflection. Kind eyes mirrored in stainless blade, were gazing in her direction. Alas, the prince had graced her world, albeit chainsaw aisle. Obviously, oblivious she didn't see, he smiled, Ted Bundy style.
His cart of unbolted hardware goods, she noticed them to be duct tape, trash bags, coupons for rubber gloves, a pack of three. Razor knife, replacement blades, both items caught her eye. His voice sounded familiar when he stopped to say to tell her hi.
The hair stood up upon her neck, her inner voice was dim. All common sense crashed to the floor. She loved and hated him. She followed him up to the front, replacement blades and all, even helped unload his cart, a killer's hardware haul. Her goodness melted sinister, so close to Satan's reach, bathing her darkness as she eyed his cart with bleach.
She stood in line behind him as she wondered if she dared utter more before he left. Her number she would share. As he smiled and looked behind him, he saw her things to buy, the rope and ball-peen hammer, a gigantic can of lye.
He left the store. She followed him, leaving cart behind, agreeing to meet up later. Had she totally lost her mind? She went back to retrieve her things, the hammer, then a spade, an afterthought she purchased chalk, a sharpener for his blade.
Now at home and settled in, her mind would fantasize, an invitation might she give for a horror exercise. Her thoughts came back in focus by the ringing of her phone. Impulsively, she volunteered that neither be alone. Going through the tools she bought, she placed each one aside. He said within an hour is when he would arrive.
She made their drinks with antifreeze and cocktails arsenic style. Then she took the chalk and outlined where his corpse would grace the tile. His appetizer would be she. Been there, done that, not. No, for she must beat him to the punch and never let fear show.
She prepared the snack so carefully, a pinch of this, a dash of that. She laced the glasses with dark glove, purring like a cat. She let him in. He eyed her knife. His hand went for her throat. His haunting grasp excited her. The heartbeat skipped a note. A car door slammed, footsteps heard, and four eyes wide with fear. Two shadows standing at the door. An interruption here.
A plan now foiled. Their kids walked in. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad, they said. Their foreplay time now ambushed. It was time to go to bed. They'd try again another time to quench their blood's desire, meeting in the hardware store, igniting killer's fire. Oh. Oh, that was awesome.
It's like an epic. Deb, did you want to say something about Hatter's killer's fire?
Yeah, I think that the two of you write incredibly together. I think that the two of you read it awesomely together. I don't even know what to pick. Just the details and the fear, the card of unbought hardware goods. She noticed them to be duct tape, trash bags, coupons, four rubber gloves, a pack of three. So, like, there's that patented. You can just you just know it was Hatter even without the JH underneath. But she responds brilliantly as well. Her hair stood up upon her neck. Her inner voice was dim. So like, complement each other quite well, and it's an absolutely amazing piece. And I remember it, and it's just a wowza.
Excellent comment.
Great.
And I think the caller, hello 506, is that north of the border? Hello?
Yes, it is. It's Lady A.
Hello, Lady A. Lady A, are you well?
Hello, I can hardly hear you.
Oh, okay. I've been going okay, but maybe I'm getting quieter. But I'm hoping that you're okay. That's what I was saying.
Yes, thank you very much.
Excellent.
How are you?
Did you hear? I'm very well. Did you hear that last piece by Sweet and Hatter? When you were on hold, or did you? Well, did you want to make?
Yes, I did hear it. And I thought it was pretty amazing. And I'm just trying to pull it up again. Hang on a second. I'm lost.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. You're with us, you know, and it's pretty late too, so in fairness.
I thought the... the last verse was quite humorous as well.
Yes, it was a nice denouement, as they say in France. It was really nice.
When we wrote this, we were going along with the storyline, and I remember it was several days passing it back and forth.
Yes,
and we both said, "How are we going to end this?" And
I don't know.
And then but a day later, she pops up. She goes, I got it.
So she's
responsible for how it ended, yeah.
No, did very, very well. No, absolutely. It was a great way to end it. So, okey-doke, we move forward because we've only got 15 minutes. It's quite unbelievable, really. It's been an hour and 45 that we've been on, and we still haven't played Budo's song, so I'm about to now. His piece is up on the board, and Budo is on the air now.
Why do I love you? Won't you give me what I need and thank heaven above? You give me unconditional love.
For me, was fading right back as the volume went back, but an amazing piece of guitar work there by Budo on the electric guitar at the front, and not to, you know, say nothing about the bass guitar that was actually keeping the rhythm and the drums at the back. So, Budo, I don't know if you did all of that. God, I hope you didn't, because if you did, that's just remarkable. But you're a one-person band. But amazing work on the electric guitar, and love the lyrics. Lady A, did you want to say a few words and then read your piece?
Sure. I thought the different parts of the guitar licks were very Hendrix sounding, so I enjoyed that. And the song itself was good too, and it reminded me of another song, and I can't think of what it is right now. But I guess I was like you, engrossed in the guitar playing, and
I
thought there were times
that
it really did sound like Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, it was brilliant stuff. Brilliant stuff. So, so thank you, Buddha. Great work. And your poem is up on the board, Lady A. Did you want to read that for us?
Sure. Now, I wrote this not too long ago. A month ago, and it's called Day's Eye. There in a field of daisies she lay, gazing upwards this sunny day. Pristine petals in breezes jiggle, yellow buttons smile in the middle. Canopy cerulean blue, clean, clear, the prettiest of hues. Day's eyes, whose petals wake and open at dawn till dusk, press on, petals close, dreams unfold, stories of loss then told. She quietly cried, child, daisies embrace her tear-stained face. Adrift on a sea, set sorrow free, for time she is a daisy. Linen like petals caress the meadows, sunsets it all aglow. Remember this flower has the power for healing broken hearts.
Two.
In peace.
Yes, Lydia, that was lovely. Did you want to say a few words? Hatter, are you there? Mr. Hatter.
Oh, Hatter.
Yeah, that's you.
Yeah. I love the way you first mentioned. Where is it? Daisies she lay there in a field of daisies she lay, and then you start off with the day's eye, whose petals wake in the open. And I thought that was wonderfully done. And the next stanza, she quietly cried. This is one of those. If you take the first line of each stanza, I believe there in a field of daisies she lay, gazing upwards of the sunny day. Day's eyes, whose petals wake and open at dawn till dusk, press on, drift at sea. Yeah, Lady A showing off. Nicely done, Lady A.
Thank you. The word daisy is a derivative of an old English name of the daisy, and it's pronounced day's eye, which translates, in the old English, but it translates to day's eye. and because the petals open and close at the beginning and end of day. And the daisy is also used to symbolize the beauty, love, and fertility, along with motherhood, childbirth, and new beginnings.
There you go. You want something again, Lady O? Thank you. I have a piece up on the board now by R.S. Morris, who sent us not just a piece, but a SoundCloud, so thank you. And I'm going to play that now.
Strolling through the local cemetery, a grave with a pointed headstone. Next to it, a small rebel flag. Looking around, I see he's not alone. Everywhere my eyes fell were soldiers from the Civil War. I stopped to read the inscriptions. Hadn't thought much about this before. What were these men like? What possessed them to risk their lives? What made them leave their children? What caused them to abandon their wives? Warren L. Banks, part of Company C, joined the 53rd Georgia Regiment. He was fighting as a Confederate. Into pure hell, this man bravely went. Henry Cheshire joined in Florida, lying beside his southern neighbor. Belonged to Company A, 1st Cavalry, died at the tip of a Union saber. Harrison Maynard, another from Georgia, one of Carroll County's Wool Hat Boys, died while giving it all among flying bullets and cannon noise. Richard B. Hayden from Virginia, T.L. Tripp from Mississippi, joined up just by word of mouth. War took the life of Private G.W. McKenzie. These men born all over the South, now together under this patch of land, fought for what they thought was right. Lincoln was intruding, so they took a stand. It was called the Civil War. The South led by Robert E. Lee. There was nothing civil about it. Proof was the march to the sea. They fought hard for the South, preventing tyranny from the top, gave their lives for their cause. Lincoln, they knew, had to be stopped. W. R. Florence, T. E. Eliot, S. B. Forrester, Charles Samuel Stark, Grandison P. Gentry, J. C. Eliot, John Hobbs, Pat Conn, and John Clark. Those names, a few of thousands, who knew what had to be done, fought in the day, during the dark, fought during winter, under hot sun. Many never had proper graves, buried where they fell, not even a prayer. Today, they are under roads and malls. Most will never know. Most will never care. They joined without hesitation. They all had lives, like you and I. Likely knew would not see them again as they kissed their family goodbye.
Well, R.S. Morris is an expert. I would suggest to you that the history of the Civil War and his pieces, they just echo a sincerity and a sense of place. And I thought that was a beautiful poem. Deb, what did you think of R.S. Morris's books?
Yeah, I like the careful detail that he puts into the, shows the the pride he has in the history and work that he puts into it. But in this particular case, I especially like the fact that he said the names like it was a list of a roll call, a little tribute nod to each of the names as he called them out during the read. And I really think that was my favorite part of this one, was giving those men the nod and the tribute I guess tribute is the best word, but the respect that he paid to them and the time period with his poetry. It was a very great read, and he always puts just the right notes in the background in the music. Great job.
Respect's a good word. Look, I never know how we get through 2 hours, Deb, but we seem to. And so my thanks to you for helping out. My thanks to Hatter for being there, and my thanks to Lady A and Sweet and Frank for calling in, and my thanks to Rebecca and to Joe for being there on the board and rolling as we went through. So we've only got a few minutes to go, and so I'm back tomorrow with Hatter and Deb for money. I think it's money tomorrow, isn't it, Hatter?
Money.
Yep. All about money.
So we're on money. But meantime, I'm going to finish. Well, of course, we started, I think, with Banjo Patterson Tom, but I'm going to finish with one anyway if we didn't. This is Black Swan. And, of course, it goes a little bit like this. As I lie at rest on a patch of clover in the Western Park when the day is done, I watch as the wild black swans fly over with their phalanx turned to the sinking sun. And I hear the clang of their leader crying to a lagging mate in the rearward flying, and they fade away in the darkness dying where the stars are mustering one by one. Oh, you wild black swans, 'twere a world of wonder for a while to join in your western flight with the stars above and the dim earth under through the cooling air of a glorious night. As we swept along and our pinions winging, we should catch the chime of a church bell ringing or the distant note of a torrent singing, the far-off flash of a station light. From the northern lakes with the reeds and rushes where the hills are clothed through the purple haze, where the bellbirds chime and the song of thrushes make music sweet in the jungle maze, they will hold their course to the westward ever till they reach the banks of the old grey river where the waters wash and the reed beds quiver in the burning heat of the summer day. Are you strange wild birds, will you bear a greeting to the folk that live in that western land? Then for every sweep of your pinions beating, you shall bear a wish to the sunburnt, to the stalwart men fighting with the heat and drought and the dust storm smiting, yet whose life somehow has a strange inviting when once to the work they've put their hand. Facing it yet, oh my friend stout-hearted, what does it matter for rain or shine? For the hopes deferred and the grain departed, nothing could conquer that heart of mine. And thy health and strength are beyond confessing are the only joys that are worth possessing. May the days to come be as rich in blessing as the days we spent in the old lang syne. I would fain go back to the old grey rivers, the old bush days when our hearts were light. But alas, those days have fled forever. They are like the swans that swept from sight. And I know full well that the stranger's faces would meet us now in our dearest places, for our day is dead and there's left no traces but the thoughts that live in my mind tonight. There are folk long dead and our hearts would sicken. We should grieve for them with a bitter pain. If the past could live and the dead could quicken, we might then turn to that life again. But on lonely nights we should hear them calling. We should hear their steps on the pathways falling. We should loathe the life with a hate appalling in our lonely rides by the ridge and plain. In the silent park, a scent of clover, and the distant roar of the town is dead. And I hear once more as the swans fly over their far-off clamour from overhead. They are flying west, by their instinct guided, for man likewise is his rate decided, and griefs apportioned and joys divided by a mighty power, with a purpose dread. in poem.
And Joe.
See, that's a poem. That's a poem.
It is.
That's what poetry is all about. It's about poems like that. Okie dokie. So, with all of that, my thanks to everybody. It's been a pleasure. I do these shows occasionally to fill in, Deb, so my thanks for offering. And to all of the Australian people listening, happy Father's Day for tomorrow night and tomorrow. I know it's different from America where Father's Day is in June. Father's Day here, unbelievably, is in September. It's probably done by the greeting card companies. I reckon they sort of do Father's Day in America and then they say, God, we've got too many cards we haven't sold. So we're going to do it now in Australia. Anyway, with all of that, we are back. Deb and Hatter and I for Money tomorrow, same bat time, same bat channel. And so we will see you there. Thank you to Deb, to Hatter, and to Lady A for joining us late. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, and happy Father's Day. Good night.
Thank you. Been a pleasure. I am going to take us out with where we took us in, really, which was my old frame from years ago and Ice House. So here we go. Go for it, Ivor.
Are you hiding?
And we are back for money tomorrow night, same bat time, same bat channel. I will catch you all then. Thanks a lot. See you soon.
See you, Effie. Thanks, Deb.
I respect everyone. Good night.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.